Hey, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and thanks for checking out Heroes in Our Midst, brought to you by Elite Sports Injury, here to help when you need a physio or massage therapist. So, Heroes in Our Midst. Yes, we are talking to people who have done amazing things that would indeed put them in the category of heroes, but each one of them would tell you that they are simply like us. And that's why they are in our midst. Olympic champion speed skater Cindy Klaassen is one of them and is our first guest of this season. And if Cindy had any dreams, it was to play hockey in the Olympic Games, but that didn't happen for her. And yet her story is the stuff that dreams are made of. She made headlines around the world when she achieved a five-medal performance at the 2006 Winter Olympics in Torino. Five. But when you hear Cindy tell her story, you will realize that it's not all about her. In fact, her main desire is to put the focus on her faith. And we will get to that, but not before Cindy herself takes us back to the beginning and tells us where she grew up and how her life of sport began.
Yeah, I grew up in Winnipeg in North Kildonan, and sports were a big part of life. I have three siblings, so a brother after me and then two sisters, and we were always playing sports. And it was like, as soon as you came home from school, you were out on the driveway playing street hockey or maybe playing soccer or just whatever kind of sport we could get our hands on. And a big one for me was hockey. And my dad loved the game of hockey. He played a little bit too, and just recreationally. And so he got us all into hockey at one point. And for me, I just grew to love the sport so much. My best friend down the street, or one of my best friends, his dad would always make an outdoor rink in the winter. And so we'd always be out there playing. As soon as we finished dinner, we'd go over there, get our skates on and play. And then also at the Gateway Recreation Center, like that's where I started playing hockey and learned a lot about the sport those early years.
So how old were you when you put your first pair of skates on?
My parents said I was about three, maybe. I guess like probably common age for people to start skating. But I do remember specifically my dad taking me out to Harbor View, and I was pretty lazy. I didn't want to skate. I just wanted him to push me around. Like I didn't want to do any work. I just wanted him to push me or pull me around. And eventually I guess I got over that and got a bit better at skating. But yeah, I love being on skates at an early age.
Yeah, I think sometimes even parents of young kids, you know, they want someone like you to, this is the sign that your kid is going to be an Olympian or is going to win an Olympic gold medal. But, you know, were there some signs that you actually had some extra coordination, or were you just that cute little kid who was a little bit lazy and looked like everybody else?
I think I did have, I felt like just picking up sports was kind of natural to me. Like, I think probably just because it was such a big part of our lives growing up. And so playing hockey, I was such a tomboy growing up. And so all my friends were boys and all my friends were playing hockey. And actually, to tell you the truth, I think, I don't know if this is true or not, but the joke was that my dad took me to two different rinks, and one rink had hockey playing on it and one had ringette playing on it. And he asked me which one I wanted to play. And apparently he said, do you want to play hockey with all of your friends, or do you want to play ringette with girls that you probably won't know anybody though? And so I picked hockey just because all my friends were boys and they're all playing hockey. So that's the sport I want to do.
That's so cool. So organized hockey obviously became a big part of your life, and your dreams started to, if anything, your bigger dreams included hockey only.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as I was growing up, even through like junior high and high school, I still was playing any sport I could. Like I played field lacrosse. I played a little, I even tried rugby one year, but then the school sports like basketball, volleyball, badminton. But at an early age, we found out that women's hockey was going to be in the Olympics for the very first time in 1998. And that quickly became my dream in life, was to compete for Canada at the Olympics in women's hockey. And when I was growing up, there were hardly any girls playing hockey at that time. And so so I continued to play with the boys. I remember there was one other girl, her name was Christy Lambert, I believe. She was in our league too. But other than that, there just weren't any other girls. So I just continued to play with the boys. And fortunately, I was able to make some of the top teams. I made the AA team and then even the AAA team. And then the guys just started getting too big for me with body checking. And I also didn't have the hardest slap shot. It was more my legs that kept me going than my upper body. And so I ended up switching to a women's league when I was about, I think, 16, just because that was the only opportunity for me at that time. And so I went from playing boys hockey to a women's league, and we were playing like at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And so I come home exhausted and have to go to school the next day. But I love the sport, and I had my eyes fixed on the 98 Olympics. And I really thought that things were heading in that direction. And so in 1997, the year before the Olympics, I got a chance to go out to Calgary to try out for the women's national team. And what they were doing is they were just picking, I think they had 120 females trying out and they were going to pick five spots. So three forwards, two defense, one goalie, that out of the people they select, they would move to Calgary in the fall and then have an opportunity to try to beat out the national team players for an Olympic spot. And so I went to that tryout trying to be one of the two defensemen they were picked. And I felt like the tryouts had gone well and I'd done my best. And then I went home and got the call soon after that I had been cut, and I was devastated. It was just heartbreaking finding out that like my dreams, that I had that dream for years, and it wasn't going to come true for me.
Wow. I think a lot of people don't think of Cindy Klaassen as having a dream not come true for you, because your story is made of some dream results. But before we get to the switch that you made in sport, do you remember watching specific athletes, hockey players, female hockey players, when you were thinking, I want to go to that 98 Olympics?
You know what, for me, I was still focusing more on the men's side. Like I was still watching, like, so Joe Sakic, Mario Lemieux, Ray Bourque, these are like my heroes. And I would watch them on TV all the time. And for women's hockey, there wasn't like a ton of it that was on TV. And so I didn't really get to watch too much of it. So I was still kind of looking at the men and trying to emulate how they skated and performed. But I do remember, I remember one name from Winnipeg, Susie Ewan, that she was a really good hockey player. I remember looking up to her, and my dad really making a point of like telling me like how good she was. And so I remember that name. But back then, there just wasn't that much exposure for the women's game.
Well, for sure. And like you said, it was going to be in the Olympics in 98 for the first time. So it wasn't like you had been watching them in the Olympics. Maybe even for those listening, who were some of your peers at that time? Who were you trying out against? I mean, to give us some perspective on the fact that you didn't make it. Well, there were some pretty incredible female hockey players that would have been in your camp.
Yeah. So, I mean, Haley Wickenheiser, she wasn't at the camp because she was already on the team. She was so good. And Danielle Goyette, they were already on the team. But Jen Botterill, who I knew, I played hockey with her. We were both at those tryouts. And I mean, look at, like, she went on to, how many gold medals did she win at the Olympics?
Four or something? I don't even know.
And now I see her on TV all the time when I watch hockey. And so she just did phenomenally well. And there were some outstanding hockey players there. And so it was an honor to be able to go to those tryouts. And they just unfortunately didn't turn out the way I wanted them to, but that's the way life goes sometimes.
You mentioning some of those names, I guess that's all good, that, you know, but it doesn't make getting cut any easier, right? Like, just because we know how great they were, you wanted to be as great as them at the game. And at that point, they told you, well, that's not going to happen for you. And so, I mean, you came home, and one thing that stuck out for me already in what you said was your legs always helped you keep up with the boys. Your upper body wasn't as good, which, I mean, maybe should have tipped you off on what was to come, but how were you to know? So how did you know? What happened? Like, so you weren't, your dream of hockey did not, you know, get realized the way you hoped it would. What was your mindset then? Were you like, I'm going to try again? Were like, when did speed skating come into the picture?
Well, I kind of have an embarrassing story if you have time for it.
But sure.
So the plan was that I was going to move to Calgary that fall because I thought I was going to make the team. So I had even applied to the University of Calgary and thought I would go to school there because I turned 18 that summer. So I was going into my first year of university. And so I just thought like, well, I didn't make it this time, but I also had an opportunity to, since I didn't make it, I could go there and still train with the national team and be part of like some of their practices and stuff. And so I thought, well, that's a great opportunity and I'll take that. And then hopefully I'll get stronger, learn a lot more about the game. And maybe in 2002, I'd have an opportunity to make it. So my family helped me pack up and we drove out to Calgary. And unfortunately, because I ended up applying to the university a bit late, so they didn't have space in the dorms for me to stay. So I had to stay at, there's the Foothills Hospital. It was right next to the university and or very close to it. And they had some kind of apartment there for residents. And so I had to stay there and I had a room like where I would be sharing a bathroom with people down the hall. And it was just a tiny, tiny room. And there was nobody there from hockey or anybody from school there. And so my parents dropped me off. And after the first weekend, I called home and said, I can't do this. I need to come home. And so I packed up and I went back home. Like after one weekend, I didn't even get on the ice or anything like that. I was just so homesick. And so I ended up going back home and I fortunately was able to get into the University of Manitoba. So I started going to school and I just thought, well, I'll just keep competing in the women's league and in Winnipeg and then keep working hard and hopefully 2002 would work out for me. But I was used to all of those high school sports that I played along with hockey. And now all of a sudden I didn't have that anymore. And so I was trying to find something to do. And my parents suggested speed skating because I had always been a strong skater in hockey. And to be honest, my first reaction to them was absolutely not, because there was no way I was going to put on one of those tight skin suits. And then the long blades, they just looked funny to me. And so I told them, no, I wouldn't do it. But they kept pushing me and they knew the provincial team coach, Ann Mushmansky. And so they had a connection and could get me set up in a club. And so I think it was probably more or less just to get them off my back. I told them I'd go to a practice. And so I went to my first practice and I figured, well, it'll just be like hockey, but faster because the blades are so long. But when I stepped onto the ice that first time, I was in for a huge surprise because the blades are so much longer and like a lot narrower than a hockey skate. So there I was, 18 years old, just like struggling to make my way around the ice surface, hoping that I wasn't going to fall down, and little five-year-old kids are flying past me. So it was a very humbling experience. And I'm not sure why I went back. My parents said I was pretty quiet the first few practices that I came home from, and they thought for sure I was just going to give it up. But for some reason, like, I think I liked the challenge. I wanted to see what I could do. And it was also, I knew it was a good way to stay active and keep up my fitness for hockey. And so I kept going. And I remember that first year of skating, watching the 98 Olympics and being glued to the television set, but not to watch hockey, but to watch speed skating. And I remember watching Katrina Ledone win gold in the 500. And then Susan Ock, who's from Winnipeg, she won silver in that same race. And I was just so inspired by them and the other Canadians that had done so well there. And a new dream was planted in my heart. It was just pretty crazy because I was still so bad. It took me the whole first season to actually work up the courage to put a skin suit on. But my coaches convinced me that I would go faster if I put one of those on. But I also had a couple of coaches like Ann Mushmansky again and then Lori Dara. And they really encouraged me and said, like, you know, maybe try giving up, because I was still playing hockey at the time. And they said, maybe try giving up hockey for 1 year and see what you can do with speed skating. And so I took up the challenge and never looked back after that.
Incredible. So really, your rise in the sport happened fairly quickly. Bring us along in your journey from being like struggling on the oval with the five-year-olds passing you to really being somewhat of a legit skater. How long was that process? And then what happened? Were you going to competitions and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So the first year, I was just learning the sport, still trying to figure out like where I fit in and stuff and trying to figure out the technique, which seemed almost impossible to kind of achieve. But I'd made a decision with myself after that first year that if then the following year, my second year skating, I was still young enough to qualify for the Canada Games team, because I think I would have been 19 and was like 19 and under for speed skating. And so I decided that if I qualify for the Canada Games team, then in my third year of skating, I would move out to Calgary where the national team trains out of, give it another shot, hopefully not try back home again, but yeah, move out there and train to try to get onto the national team. And so in my second year of skating, Not only did I qualify for the Canada Games team, but I also qualified for the junior national team, and I ended up going to Junior Worlds and I won 2 medals there. And so that kind of like solidified it for me that, yeah, I'm going to go to Calgary and I'm going to see what I can do in this sport. So it was the second year was kind of a whirlwind, and I still like, I didn't even really know too much about the sports. So there's so many rules I still had to learn about, but yeah, it just went really well. And so that kind of decided it for me.
But you knew you could skate and you could skate fast. And what distances were you doing at this point? And do you have to specialize? Do you specialize right away? How does that work?
Oh, that's a good question. I was kind of doing almost all the distances like when I started. I think most skaters do. You probably don't specialize till like maybe early 20s. But when I got to Calgary, I kind of jumped around. Like I felt like I wanted to be a sprinter because I like the shorter distances, but I didn't really have those fast twitch muscles like say Katrina or Susan Auk have. And so my starts were a bit slower. And then I realized after doing more skating, I kind of learned that I could actually do a 5,000 meter and have a decent time, even though I didn't really like the race because it was so long. It was like, it's 12 and a half laps around the 400 meter oval. And it just, to me, it seems like it takes an eternity. Whereas like Clara Hughes, that's, I feel like she's just starting to get going at that point because she's just like a workhorse. But yeah, I kind of, as the more I skated, the more I kind of learned where my strong points were. And I feel like I was more of a middle distance skater that could do a little bit of sprinty races and a little bit of longer distance as well.
I've never thought of this before, but this came to mind. So it fits at this time in your story, because you come on the scene and I'm imagining there have been girls there who've been skating for much longer than you. And you come on the scene and boom, you're winning medals at Worlds and Juniors. And I think some young athletes, there's team dynamics that are sometimes difficult. Did you have any difficulty? Because sometimes it doesn't matter how nice you are. You know, if you're coming on and, ooh, here's a threat coming onto our team and it's competition. Did you ever have to deal with any kind of team dynamic that was hard for you?
You know what? The speed skating community was so awesome and so welcoming. And if they did have any bad feelings about it, they sure kept it a secret. And so I felt grateful for that, because when I did go to Junior Worlds, I was traveling there on my own, because I was coming from Winnipeg and all the other skaters were from different provinces. And so we were meeting I think we went to Holland first and we were meeting there, and I was going to be like rooming with people I had never met before, or like I'd only seen at one competition before. And these people had known each other. These skaters had known each other almost their whole lives because they grew up together skating. But they were just so welcoming and encouraging. And so I'm so grateful for that. And just, that's how I feel like the speed skating community is. And it's a really tight knit group, but so welcoming when newcomers come. And so I'm grateful for that.
That's actually amazing that but it makes sense, because as a Canadian, you would want someone, another strong skater on your team. It just raises the level of everything. So give us some perspective on the year that this was. And then where did you go from there?
So yeah, so that year, my second year skating was the 98-99 season. So I went to the World Juniors in 99. And then we had the Canada Games at the end of the season, which I qualified to. So I did make it, which was kind of my determining point to whether I was going to continue on. And unfortunately, the ice melted, so we didn't even get to race. We raced in Newfoundland, in Cornerbrook. And so I remember getting up. Sometimes we get up at, I think, 3 a.m. and try to get there, thinking if we're there early enough in the morning that we could possibly race, but we never got a chance to race. And so we spent a lot of time in the cafeteria, and then we ended up going skiing, downhill skiing at the end of the week, just to do something for fun.
Wow. So you never ended up skating.
It was crazy. I think that might've been the only time that's happened. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, it was unreal.
Wow. And then lead us from there. What happened after the Canada Games experience?
So after that season, I went to Calgary the following season. So for the 99-2000 season. So I wasn't able to qualify for the Fall World Cups. I think they had the team selected already. And in that winter, right around Christmas time is when speed skating usually has their trials. And so I tried out for the team and I ended up going to my very first World Cup in Calgary, which was amazing just to be able to race in front of the home crowd. And then my parents and family were able to come out and watch. And so it was really a very exciting experience for me.
And how did you do there?
Well, I have a little bit of an embarrassing story with that.
We love embarrassing stories. Okay. Please tell us.
So my very first race, I qualified for the 500 meter. And even though I didn't have those fast twitch muscles, somehow I qualified for it. And the way they race speed skating, you have to wear armbands. And so if you're in the inner lane, it's kind of like an apple. So if you were in the inner lane, you wear a white armband. And if you're in the outer lane, you wear a red armband. And so I was in the outer lane for this race. So I had a red armband on. We went to the start line and the gun sounded and then it sounded again. So there was a false start. And so I heard over the speakers, first false start outer lane. And so I thought, oh my goodness, like my very first race at a World Cup and I false started. And back then you could have, you had two chances. So we went back to the start line and we got ready and I think my legs were shaking because I was so nervous. And the gun sounded again, and then it sounded again, and there was a false start. And I look ahead, and there was someone waving a red flag in front of me. And that's, I thought, well, red armband, red flag, I'm out of the race. I just false started out in my very first race and my very first World Cup. So I didn't even look around. I just took my hood off. I hung my head because I was so embarrassed. And I just slowly started skating around the inside of the track on the warm-up lane. And I got to the other side and my coach was there and she's like, get to the starting line, you're racing. And I'm kind of like scrambling, trying to put my hood on, get my glasses on and stuff and get there as fast as I can. My heart's like just pounding. And then the ref yelled at me, he said, this isn't kindergarten. I'm like, what's going on? And so I went back to the start line and I was there by myself. It turns out my pair had false started and I went and did my race. And so what happened was I just didn't know all the rules yet of speed skating. So the announcer messed up and the first false start wasn't an outer lane. And the second false start, the red flag in front of me is just to indicate there's a false start, but you're supposed to turn around and look to see what flag they're holding behind you to know what lane actually had the false start, which I had no clue about. So I did my race and I skated off the ice, went to the locker room and I just cried because I was so embarrassed. I couldn't believe I did that. And I felt so bad for holding the other races up because I just slowly went around the ice after I thought I had false started out.
This is so good for young athletes and for anyone to hear. You know, you really didn't have a clue what you were doing, but you were brave enough to go out there and you were listening to your coaches. I'm going to skate as hard as I can and see what happens and learn as I go. Boy, did you ever learn as you go. Oh my goodness. So you went skated, you had your embarrassing moment and how did that competition go for you?
Oh, it went okay. Like I mean, at the start, when I first made the national team, I was kind of, they have an A group and a B group and the A group is the group that gets onto television. It's the faster group. And so I was mostly in the B group for the first maybe 1 or 2 years. And so in that competition, like, I think I was just kind of like middle of the pack and just being my first experience there, like it went well enough that I ended up getting a qualifying time to go to the world singles at the end of the year. It's the world championships. And so, which was in Japan, which is really neat because I get to travel around the world. I'd never been anywhere really. And so it was really exciting that that first year, that first competition went fairly decently. I mean, I was so new to the team and I didn't really know anybody on the team and they were awesome and everything. But when we went to Japan for the world singles, they put me in my own hotel room. And like, you think that someone knew you'd want to put them with another teammate. So you kind of know like, hey, we'll go to breakfast together, lunch and stuff like that. And like, I was on my own and it was still a great time. And I made some new friends there too from other teams. And so it was really special.
Amazing. I'm sure some people are listening and thinking, okay, get to all the winning. You did so much of that, Cindy. Like, when did it really become apparent to you that not only did you love speed skating, but you were super good at it?
I think in 2001, so this would be in the winter of 2001. So it was my second year in Calgary, second year on the national team. We went to the World All-Around Championships in Budapest. And it was really neat because we got to skate outdoors in front of this castle. And so it was just really, it was really spectacular and just a really neat feeling. But I went into that competition, and what they do is you race four distances, like short, like for women, it's 500, 1500, 3000, 5000. And then they combine all of your times, and then they have an overall winner at the end. And at the end of that competition, I ended up in fourth place overall. And I thought to myself, you know, like maybe I have a shot at this. Like maybe I could get to the Olympics, and who knows what could happen there. But I think that's when I really started to believe that I could maybe make it. It was an inspiring competition for me.
Yeah. Now, how do you qualify for the Olympics in speed skating? Maybe, I mean, and that's probably where we continue in your journey, because that was your next quest, wasn't it?
Yeah. After that, so that Budapest World Championships was the 2000-2001 season. So the next season would have been the Olympic season. And based off of my results, I believe it was at the World Championships at the very end of the year. It was the World Single Distances, which is like our biggest kind of competition at the end of the season. Based off of my placings there, they were actually in Salt Lake City because the Olympics were going to be in Salt Lake City in 2002. So it was kind of a trial run for them. And so we had our competition there, and based off of my placings there, I ended up pre-qualifying for the Olympics. And so all I really had to do the next season was kind of keep like, I don't know if it was like stay in the top 10 in the world or something like that. As long as I showed that I was still at a high level, I didn't have to go to the Olympic trials to actually try out for the team. But for some of the skaters who didn't pre-qualify, we would have our trials. It's usually right after Christmas, like our beginning of January, and they take the team from that, from those trials. And so I think there's maybe one or two distances that I still had to qualify for, because the 1,000 meter, I didn't really race that much during the season. So I didn't race it in Salt Lake for the World Single Championships to try to pre-qualify. So I had to compete in that to make it to the Olympics. And then maybe the 5,000 meter, I'm not quite sure. It's so long ago. I can't totally remember.
So was there then, even though it's a long time ago, was there a moment where you knew you were going to be an Olympian? Often people talk about that. They talk about the moment. Was it that way that you had a moment where you knew?
It wasn't really, just because I had that pre-qualification the year before. Right. So basically, I mean, that could have been taken away from me if all of a sudden I went into the Fall World Cups the next season and like was a completely different skater and wasn't right. Performing like I had the season before, then I could have lost that placing. But I was pretty confident that I was like continuously improving. And so I felt like after that competition, that kind of solidified it for me, but it was still like, there's a chance that I could not be going as well.
Right. Right. And it doesn't sound like that weighed on your mind much, as you had the confidence, and probably at that stage in your career, like you say, you were still improving. So take us to the Olympic Games in 2002. What was that like for you?
Well, that first week leading up to my very first race, I was extremely nervous. I couldn't believe, because this is the biggest competition of my life and something that I had always dreamed of, like first going in hockey. And then when that didn't happen, now all of a sudden I was going in speed skating, and to think that I'd be representing our country, it felt like the whole world was going to be watching. And I remember that first week leading up to my first race, just being so nervous that I was having trouble eating and sleeping, that my coach the night before my big race, she ended up taking me out to McDonald's just to get some comfort food in me, because she was worried that I wouldn't have enough energy the day of the race. And so I did eat that. I remember just feeling so good getting some McDonald's in me, not what I would normally eat before a race. But then the morning of the race too, you know, I woke up that morning, I was still nervous. And I remember while I was killing time before heading over to the oval for the race, I was checking my email, and I got an email from my former junior high and high school MBCI in Winnipeg. And there was a bunch of messages from staff and students, and they just said like they're so proud of me and like congratulations on going to the Olympics, and that they're praying for me, and they just wanted me to go out and do the best that I could. And after that, receiving that email, it just kind of hit me that, yeah, like I had done all the preparation I could. I couldn't change anything at that point. And I was as ready as I was going to be. And so I didn't have to be nervous. And so I remember going into that first race and it was a 3000 meter, which is 7.5 laps around the oval. And I was paired with Claudia Pechstein, who's from Germany. She was the world record holder at the time. And I remember the gun sounded and I took off probably a little faster than I should have. And I was ahead of her for about 4 laps or so into the race. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm beating the world record holder. And as soon as I thought that, I felt like I hit the wall. And all of a sudden it felt like my legs were getting heavy. The lactic acid was building up. And I think we stayed maybe neck and neck till about 1.5 laps to go. And then she took off from me. Like, to me, it felt like I was standing still. And I remember coming around that very last corner of the race and I could see her. She looked like she was miles away from me. She was crossing the finish line, like raising her hands in victory, and the crowd just erupted. And I was thinking to myself, like, keep going, don't fall down, because my legs just felt like two like cement pillars. And when I finally crossed the finish line, I looked up at the leaderboard and to my surprise, my name was actually in second place. And there was one last pair that had to race after me. So there was a chance I could get booted off the podium, but only one of those skaters ended up beating me. And I ended up with the bronze medal in my very first race. So it was just kind of, it was such a surprise. And it was just so amazing to be wearing the maple leaf, winning a medal for our country. And yeah, it was just such an honor and really special for me.
I love that we just got into actually into your head and we actually know what you were thinking in that moment. You know, we have no clue what great Olympians are thinking when they're in the midst of their race. So you're an Olympic medalist, a bronze medal. I mean, that's a dream come true. That's something that so few people even do, just that. But you went on to do so much more. Lead us from that moment. You know, what was the rest of the games like and then beyond?
So the rest of the games, I was competing almost the whole way through because I had qualified for 4 distances while I was there. And so I raced till I think almost maybe the second last day. So I didn't really get much time to like enjoy like going to see other competitions and stuff like that. I was just focused on my next races. And I did end up getting a couple of 4th places. So I was very close to the podium, but just couldn't quite make it onto the podium again. But it was still just an amazing experience to be at those games and to wear the maple leaf on my back and then to have my family come, because like it was so close, like being in North America, it was really special that they could come out and celebrate with me and cheer me on. And so it was great to have them there because they've always been my biggest supporters throughout my whole life.
Yeah. So did you know right away you were going to continue skating? Was it a no-brainer? Like it wasn't even an issue? Like a lot of athletes make that big decision after they've been to a games. You had a medal, you know, things went pretty well. Or did you right away know there was more for you?
Well, funny thing is that before those 2002 Olympics, I was thinking of maybe like, what am I doing with my life? Maybe I should be getting on with it and going to school and doing something else. Like, and so my coach had to have a talk with me. And so it was kind of funny that, I don't know, I started having these doubts, like maybe like, am I going to lose out on my education because I'm just focusing on skating right now? But after the 2002 Olympics, then I had my sights set on 2006 and I just wanted to see what I could do and if I could get stronger and improve on my technique, because I was still learning. I mean, as a skater, you're always trying to fine tune your technique and I still had a long way to go too.
So bring us to when Cindy Klaassen really, did it explode for you leading to the 2006 games where, you know, magical things happened? We all want to know, how does that happen, that kind of performance?
I just had great coaches along the way. Going into the 2006 season, Neil Marshall was my coach and I felt like we really just clicked. Like he really knew me. I really felt like I could trust him and everything. Even before like my best races there, I remember, so I had raced the 1000 meter and I ended up getting a silver medal in that race, but I just didn't feel like myself. And I felt like something was off during those Olympics. And I remember sitting down with him after the race and we just stayed out there talking. And I said to him, I just don't feel like something just seems off. And he thought about it and thought about it. And then he said to me, like, I know what we got to do. And so my next race was the 1500 meter. And he thought that what I had to do was train really hard the day before that race. And that'll set me up for the 1500. And I remember being on the ice way longer than anybody else the day before my 1500 meter race, and even some of the coaches saying like, you know, you're racing tomorrow, right? And just being surprised that I was still training and going hard on the ice. But that set me up exactly to have like the best race of my life the next day. And I just trusted him that he knew what I needed. And so, so coaching, that coach athlete relationship is so huge. And then also teammates, like we had a very small group that we trained with. There was only six of us, but we were so tight knit and we really supported each other and encouraged each other. And we just love being around each other. So going to training, it was like, you're going with your best friends. And we would often finish a training session and go out for breakfast or lunch or go for a coffee or something like that. And we just love being around each other. And I think that having fun and while training hard, I think that's huge. And I think that really helped to set me up to be prepared for those Olympic Games.
Okay. So you said that was the best race. Like the best race was that 1500. What made it the best?
I just felt like everything clicked. And so, like you said, like you got a little bit of like, of what's going on in my mind during a race. And then during that race, I can't even remember anything. It's like, I just had tunnel vision and I was just, I think I remember maybe hearing someone yell something, like cheer me on the side, but it was kind of like in my head and out the next second. And I just don't remember much about it just because I was just so focused and everything was just going smoothly. And so, yeah, I just felt like I couldn't have raced it any different. I couldn't have taken any stride differently. I just raced it the best that I could. So,
wow. At that point, how many medals was that?
I think it was medal 4. So I only had one more race after that. So, it really clicked in my fourth race there.
Wow. I love that you have to think about how many it was in that one games. Does that, when you think back to that, Cindy, does that even seem real? Like that was record breaking. The world was talking about this young lady from Canada who was doing something crazy special. In every Olympic Games, it seems there's an athlete that does something really special. That was you. How does that feel? I don't know. What's that like?
It's such an honor. And again, like to be competing for Canada at those games was so special. And I just remember not thinking about any of that. Like my coach and I decided going into those games that because I was going to be racing, I think it was like every third day that I would do my race. And then my family was there. So the next day I would have a chance to like see them, go out for dinner with them. Also I'd have to do some training the next day because I'd be racing on the third day. And so he said that that day that you race, like either whether it goes well or it goes poorly, then focus on it that day. And the next day you have to start focusing about your next race. And so I wasn't really thinking about the races that I had finished already. I was just more or less like looking forward, looking ahead at my next race. And then also just trying to enjoy time with my family as well, because it was so special that they came all the way out to Italy to be there for me.
Yeah. Sounds like you really worked at the sport and life balance, and keeping relationships important for you was so huge. And I love that you say that, because I think that's important. Often as athletes, we can get so focused, we even shut out family and friends, right? Because we feel we have to sacrifice it all. And yet part of your success was including them. I really like that. I think that's really cool. And have you ever asked actually your coach, have you asked Neil, like, how did you know I should work harder? Was it maybe like, was that kind of a guess for him? Or was, I mean, coaches are brilliant, but sometimes when you're coaching, you go, I don't know what to do for this kid. How about this? Let's throw this paint at the wall. You know, have you ever talked about that since?
Yeah, we actually did talk about it. We talked about it, and he said that the reason he came up with that was he looked back at my World Cup races that I had done that previous year. And he noticed that it was always the second day that I performed better. And so he thought, you know, maybe I just need more work in my legs so that I feel stronger the second day. And so that's why he worked me so hard the day before. And yeah, and I trusted him. And so I was really fortunate.
So cool. So games of a lifetime, experience of a lifetime. And you kept skating.
Yeah.
Why? Some might wonder, did you keep skating to try to repeat that? What was your motivation, Cindy, to keep going?
You know, my biggest motivation was that the Olympics were going to be in Canada the next time around. And I mean, what better Olympic experience could you have than racing in front of the home crowd and on home soil? And so that's why I kept going. And unfortunately, I had like some setbacks along the way. I ended up having bilateral knee surgery a year and a half before the games. And so that kind of wrecked my, like, I just wasn't able to get back into like top shape or top like skating shape again before those games. But I was able to qualify for those games. And to tell you the truth, like, I mean, my results there were a far cry from what I had done the previous games. But stepping onto the ice and hearing the crowd on, like, when we were on the ice surface, it actually brought tears to my eyes. It was just amazing. Just the support that we had, it just felt like the whole country was there watching us and cheering us on. And it was really, it was, although I didn't do as well, it was just so special to be there and to be representing our country in our home country.
I love that you felt that way, because I'm thinking, how could there not have been massive pressure on you to be our Canadian hero once again and bring home all those medals? Did you feel that pressure?
Yeah, I did feel pressure going into it. I'm coming off of such a good Olympics in 2006. And I felt like, hey, I need to perform as well or better at these next games. And so it was tough. It was disappointing to not do as well. But really the best thing out of that was just being there, being like racing in front of the Canadians. And it was just amazing. Like, I don't remember any of the other Olympics, like feeling like the home country has that support. Like, it just didn't seem like it. And it just felt like every spectator in that oval was from Canada. That's what it felt like, even though I know that's not true, but they were just so loud. And I couldn't even hear myself skating when I was racing because they were just so loud, but it was amazing.
Yeah, it was magical. It was magical. I remember I was there watching, and I wanted nothing more than just to bring my boys to the Olympic Games in 2010 in Canada. And we accomplished that. And it really was. It was like none other that I've seen in the kind of support that our Canadian athletes had at a Winter Olympic Games. And we do well at Winter Olympics, but that was really, really incredible. When that games was over and you didn't do as well and you had some physical challenges in that, what was your decision process and what was your decision after the 2010 games, and lead us from there?
Well, I felt like I was kind of getting back into my old self again. And so I thought, you know, I think I was 30 at those Olympics and skating, like some women, like they skate longer. And so I thought, you know, if I'm still improving and I'm getting back into more race form like that I had before, then I thought, why don't I see what I can do? And I did. I think it was the season after the Olympics. I think I did like make it to the podium my very first World Cup. And so I thought, okay, things are going well. I never, ever got back to the form I had like when I was in 2006, but I was able to compete with the Team Pursuit team a few times, and we won some medals. And so that was really special to be on that team. But then I was hoping to go to Sochi in 2014, but the summer before our tryouts, we were inline skating for training and I ended up crashing and I got a concussion. And so it kind of took me out of things and I just couldn't get back into it. Like, I was getting headaches and stuff like that. And so, so I decided to actually take a year off to make sure that I was 100% sure I was done. And then I retired from skating, I guess, but the year after, I think it was the year after Sochi.
So the actual skating wrapped up for you, but such a storied career, really. And people still know, you know, I told people, I was talking to Cindy Clausen today. They're like, what has life been like for you? And has it changed at all? I know you have one daughter now and the family's growing and all of this stuff. So life has changed for you, but do people always recognize you? And what's your life been like since?
Definitely people don't recognize me. It was so long ago. 2006 seems like an eternity ago. And so I'm just, living my life, and it's great. Like you mentioned, we have a daughter. My husband and I have she's almost 2.5 years old, and we have another on the way. And so in October. And so, very exciting, just doing the family life. And I'm just this right now, I'm a stay at home mom and I love it. That's what my mom did with us when we were growing up. And so I really enjoy being at home with our daughter and just seeing her learn new things all the time and see her grow.
I just love that. Do you think your success and what you've accomplished in your life? Does it change your outlook or your dreams and what you hope for your daughter as you move forward? Or where does that sit for you? Because you realize some big ones.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that she doesn't set any limits on whatever her dreams may be, because I think that was a big thing for me with like switching to speed skating. There were people who told me it was a bad idea and that maybe I should stick with hockey and try to make the hockey team in 2002. But having a few people believe in me, it really made a huge difference. And it made me think like, yeah, why set any limits? Like, why don't I see what I can do? And so I really hope that she's like that with whatever she puts her hands to. And so, I mean, I'd love if she'd be active. Like, I'd love to play sports with her and stuff. And I hope that she is active, but whatever she chooses to do, I really hope that she just does it with all of her heart and has fun with it and doesn't set any limits.
That's so great. And that's really essentially what you did. You started to love speed skating and you did it. I know another thing you love, Cindy, and that we share in common is your faith really stuck with you. But I'd love to give you an opportunity to, you know, what role did faith play in your life? And why was that so important, do you think? And did it have anything to do with how you handled your success and what it all meant to you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up in a Christian home. And so faith was the biggest part of our lives, like bigger than sports or going to the Olympics or anything like that. And so it had a huge impact on me and putting God first in my life. And whenever I went out to race, I mean, it wasn't for me, it was that I felt like God had given me this talent to be able to skate. And so I wanted to go out and race to the best of my ability and for his glory. And so, so that was huge. And that really, it really kind of took the pressure off too of my skating as well. Like it really helped to think that, you know what, I've done the best that I can, all the preparation I can, and really the rest is in God's hands and he knows the outcome already. And so if I fall or if I make it to the finish line, he knows and he'll carry me through whatever struggles I may have. My faith has really carried me through. And also, I mean, some of your listeners might remember back in 2008, my sister Lisa had a really bad accident where her car like crashed off a bridge that goes over the Red River in Winnipeg. And she ended up partially crashing through the ice and was submerged for, they think, like maybe 5 minutes or so. And I was overseas getting ready for the World Championships. And I was told that she probably wouldn't make it that I wouldn't make it home in time even to see her alive. And I just remember our church family and community that they just surrounded us in prayer and really, really supported us. And I just remember thinking, that I couldn't fly home like right away. I had to wait till the next morning to catch the next flight home. And I remember that night, I just had a lot of time to like pray and think. And I just felt like I could release her into God's hands. And I felt that sense of peace that, you know, it's in his hands, he's taking care of her. And whether that means like it's time for her life is about to end, or whether she's going to live another day, I felt like comforted that it was in his hands. And that really gave me strength during that time. So, so faith, yeah, in every aspect of life has really given me so much strength and has really helped me to do the best that I can in everything that I might be putting my hands to.
Yeah. Incredible where it led you and the voice that it's given you to be able to share your story, and that people will want to listen to what you say, maybe because of the Olympic medals. But as we've done today, as we get to know you, we know it's about so much more than that. Well, here's what we're going to accomplish in the next few minutes. Some of our rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Are you ready? Cindy, you are 100 years old. What is the story you most love to tell?
I think that's probably from my childhood. When I was younger, probably about grade 5, I remember my parents have a cottage out in Nopaming Park, and my best friend had come out for a visit, Jason Wozniacki, and we found out there was going to be a bike race at the cottage. And we thought it would be so much fun to go watch this bike race. So the morning of the big race, we were on our bikes and just like racing each other up and down the hills and like really tiring ourselves out. And we thought to ourselves, you know what, we're pretty good at this. Like, why don't we enter the race? Like, what's holding us back? And so we didn't really think that, like, I was on this single speed beach bike and my friend was on a BMX. We didn't think like those might be detrimental, like with everybody else having gears on their bikes and racing on the trails and stuff. And then the other obstacle was that we didn't have helmets, and helmets were mandatory. And so we came up with the bright idea, thinking that we'll just wear my dad's snowmobile helmets, not thinking that they'd be too bulky and hot in the 30 degree weather. So we ended up, my dad, for some reason, he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. So we loaded up our bikes onto the back of his truck, took off to the race. And I remember pulling up into the parking lot and seeing all these people like with fancy racing bikes and decked out in racing gear. But that didn't deter me. Like I was excited to go race. And so we ended up being matched up into racers in our own age category. And fortunately for me, the store owner, Blaine, he ended up lending me his bike helmet, and someone gave my friend a bike helmet as well. Like I guess they had pity on us. But we went to the start line, and I remember the starter telling us it's a long race and that it's a really hot day, so we need to pace ourselves. Well, my dad came up to me while I was on the start line, and he whispered into my ear, and he said, as soon as the gun sounds, get out in front of everybody and go as hard as you can the whole race. And that's what I did. The gun sounded, and I just like took off and didn't look back and just went as hard as I could for that whole race. And I remember there was a kid that was on my tail for probably half the race. He ended up passing me, but at the end of the race, I ended up getting second place, and I was so exhausted and so tired. But I just remember like that lesson that my dad had taught me. It's really his competitive nature. He's like, go out as hard as you can and don't look back. And that's what I felt like I learned from that race experience, and really brought that into all of my sports endeavors after that. And so unfortunately my friend's bike broke down, so he couldn't finish the race, but it was too bad, but it was still really neat to be in our very first bike race.
What a great story, and what great advice from your dad. He obviously knew you. He knew what you could do. He was like, just go for it, sweetie. Do the whole thing. I love that. Who or what do you think people see when they see you? And is there something different you wish they would see?
I think that they just see like your typical prairie girl who survived the harsh winters in Winnipeg. And I think that's what made me so tough in sport. But really, like, as a Christian, all that I would want them to see, or I just wish that my life would just point people to Christ. And so that's the most important thing to me. And I know my name will be forgotten, it doesn't matter, but my life as a Christian, I hope that it does point to Christ.
What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
Probably that more than an athlete, I think I always wanted to be a singer growing up. Like, my favorite thing ever is singing. Those dreams were dashed when I was in elementary school in choir and a kid told me that I sing off key. And then after that, I never wanted to sing in front of people. And like, my husband can even attest to this, that I rarely sing in front of him because I just feel like I'm such a bad singer. But every time I do the road trip home to Winnipeg, it's like 13 plus hours, I'm singing the whole way home. And I remember my parents one time thinking I was crying when I walked in the door because my voice was just like so hoarse. But yeah, I just love singing, and I really enjoy it.
What exhausts you?
I think probably going to the mall and trying clothes on. For some reason, it's like as soon as I enter the mall, I'm just like, oh, the life is drained out of me. And now with my daughter, it's different. Like, we'll go to the mall and just like, I'm not trying on clothes. We're just hanging out. She might like go to the kids center or whatever. And it's more fun now, but yeah.
I love it. What energizes you?
I think seeing my daughter learn new things and just her experiencing life, I think that really energizes me a lot. And I never would have imagined that before becoming a parent.
I imagine you have more than one of these moments, but what was a moment of intense joy that you have experienced in your life?
I think when my daughter was born, it was just so amazing. And it really helps me to remember what's important in life, and family is such a huge thing to me. And so I'm just grateful for our family, and I'm excited for the next one to arrive.
Who are two or three people who influenced you, and how did they impact your life?
I would say it would be my parents would be two people that really influenced me. And then my oma, so that would be my mom's mom. My parents I mean, all three of them, because of their faith, really impacted me. And to me, that's the most important thing in my life. And so having them as people that I looked up to and just learned a lot from them, how to lead my life or like walk this life of faith. They were just such an inspiration to me. But my mom, I mean, she is just so kind and generous. And now even more as a mother myself, I think back to the ways that she raised us and thinking like, if I could just have a fraction of what she had, I just want to be more like her. And my dad, he just taught us such important values. And he gave me that killer instinct in sport. And then my grandma, she passed away just earlier this year, and she's 96 years old, and she lived a very hard life, but her faith in God was the most important thing to her. And she really found strength in that through every aspect of her life. And so she's really someone that I look up to, and I'm grateful for all the times that I had with her.
Amazing influences on your life. That's supposed to be my last question, but I have one more. Sometimes I wonder what you think. In having chatted with you and in such immense accomplishment that you have had, and you talk a lot about your faith, why do you think that God led you down a path of such personal success, and yet you want your focus to be on Him? What was the purpose, do you think? Do you ever think of that? What was the purpose of you being able to walk the path that you did, a path that so many would want to be on, a path that could end up in being so much about you and all about what you have done? You know, where do you find that purpose for that?
I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe to grow me in a bit, because personally, I'm such an introvert, and being in the spotlight, like going to the Olympics and stuff like that, was so hard for me. And, but just being able to think like, well, this is an opportunity to shine for Christ, and just finding honor in that. And I'm just grateful for those opportunities. And he also, a big thing too, is that I've had a lot of opportunities to do public speaking, which is another thing where I'm like, no, I'm so frightened and nervous about being in front of a crowd. And so I think that God really pushes us in our weaknesses. And I think that may have been part of it, is just trying to grow me as a person and to be able to share His light to the world.
Yeah. Well, it certainly has given you a stage to speak on. And I love that you're so genuine when you say every word. So not about Cindy Clawson and the number of medals that you could hang around your neck all at the same time, but it's really the heart that would be right underneath those medals, you know, that shines through them. And you've shown us that today. And that's what this podcast, I think that's what the vision for this podcast always was. Who is the human behind the accomplishment, so we can all get something and all take something from you, because we are all humans. We may not all be Olympic champions or have walked that same exact road, but we're all on this journey in this crazy life of ours. And wow, you know, you've inspired us and you've given us a lot to think about, and yet have welcomed us into that story with you. So thanks for doing that.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Michelle. It was really special to chat with you and to be a part of your podcast. So thank you.
Cindy Clawson, six-time Olympic medalist and undeniably a hero in our midst. Thank you to Elite Sports Injury for making it possible to share her story with you. With 4 locations in Winnipeg, they are here to help when you need a physio or massage therapist. Your body's worth it, so make the time for yourself. So there you go. Another story told, another hero found, and we have more to come. Please let your friends know about us. You can find all of our stories at drtoogood.com or Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you like to find your podcasts. And hey, follow us on Instagram and Twitter too, at TooGoodConsult. Thanks. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop. Thanks so much for listening. We'll chat again soon.